Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. After today's guest, Mimi Chakarova, came to the United States from Bulgaria as a teen, she started documenting her life with a camera. Well, today she is still documenting by creating films and taking photographs that amplify the stories she believes deserve far more attention. Still I Rise is her new documentary short series, and it pays homage to Maya Angelou's poem by the same name by celebrating people who persevere in spite of their struggles. One film is being released every month. Three are forthcoming, and you can watch the films at stillirisefilms.org. You can also find the links at yourcallradio.org. In her most recently released film called The Alien, today's other guest, Dionisia Ramos, explores the sacrifices her undocumented parents made for their four children to find better lives in the United States. Dionisia graduated from UC Berkeley and earned a master's degree from Cal State East Bay and now serves as director of public information for the Hayward Unified School District and lives in the Bay Area with her husband and two children. Mimi Chakarova's work has taken her all over the globe, documenting sex trafficking of Eastern European girls. This documentary is incredible. I really urge you to watch that one. Also, an intensive firefighting training program in Oakland, and then traveling the U.S. to probe the meaning of love. And Mimi Chakarova and Dionisia Ramos join me in studio today. Hi, thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you for having us, Rose.
It's great to have both of you. You know, I have to say, The Alien, the timing is perfect, Mimi, because you tell the story of Dionisia and her family. I mean, her father worked 60 years in the fields, and now we see him tending his own garden. He sent his four kids to college. And we have all of these images of these kids in these detention camps. People call them jails. I was just listening to Democracy Now! This morning, and Amy Goodman interviewed an airport worker near Brownsville, Texas, who said he sees children who are flown on their way to the plane, who are being flown to other cities across this country. So it's just very timely.
It's very timely, I agree. And I felt so bad because it took 1 year. I shot this a year ago, and it took 1 year to actually put it together. But you're right, sometimes the timing is, it's meant to be. It's meant to be released right now. And what's happening to these kids and what's happening to these families, it is beyond shameful of what we're experiencing and what we're witnessing. And I was talking to Dio in the car on the way here about how 3 years ago we were talking about Syrian refugees coming to Europe, you know, and you see these images of parents with their kids and the kids crying. And now at the U.S. border, you have these kids completely traumatized by being split up, by being separated from their moms and dads and being put in places that the parents don't even know. Mm-hmm. They don't even know how to find their kids. Mm-hmm. That's the power of storytelling. I think the reason that so many of us make images, make films, is to show you a different side, to show you, and also to work with people who have been undermined, misrepresented, whose stories, you know, who have these amazing stories, such as Dionysia's story.
Mm. And you're being polite when you say these people are being undermined and misrepresented, because under this administration, I mean, the language that is coming from the most powerful person in the world is just, how do you even describe it? I mean, Dionisia, you've lived this experience, as so many people in this country have. So what is it like for you to have this film about your family being released at a time when these families are being separated? And as Mimi said, these kids are going through so much trauma.
Right. Well, it couldn't have been our intention to do that and to, you know, have this timing. But for me, it was just really special to tell my family's story, because we got to see firsthand my family's sacrifice and really understand why, they left their home country and the struggles that they had, you know, to assimilate to this country and to create a life that would allow us to succeed. And so it is really painful to see what's happening and to see that, you know, some of us, quote unquote, you know, make it and others have such a challenging time. So it is a really difficult experience to have.
What do you think of the media coverage of this? Because what's really struck me is that there's been great investigative reporting. Reporters are going to the border. They're asking the tough questions. But in some ways, the stories are simplified by saying people are fleeing their homes because of economic reasons, because of violence, because of femicide. Very true reasons. But it goes much deeper than that. Everybody has their own story, of course.
Sure.
But what would you say about the coverage?
Well, I do think, unfortunately, you know, we gravitate towards, you know, something that touches you or, you know, a really quick moment. So I don't know that news has the ability to go in depth, which is why a series like Mimi's is so important, because you have the ability to tell a story in a way that you can't really say in a quick news piece. And so this is where I feel like art is so meaningful in our society.
And Mimi, how did you come up with this concept, Still I Rise? It just amplifies stories of people who persevere in spite of their struggles. And it's a wide range of stories. How did you come up with it?
Well, you know, Maya Angelou is one of my heroes. Nelson Mandela is one of my heroes. So it's a way to carry on their legacy and what their work was about. But also just thinking about, who do I want to work for? You know, who are the people that I want to serve? And at this time, and not just at this time, when I came to the States, I was in Baltimore City. I went to an inner city public high school. I had a very different immigrant experience than some others. And, you know, and I felt that based on what I saw in Baltimore and then based what I saw in Oakland, California, I really feel that the stories of Black and Latino people need to be just shown and displayed in a really beautiful, uplifting, Still I Rise, intimate and personal way. And so the series and the way we're doing these films in each one, they're short films, they're 10 to 15 minutes each. So they don't require a lot of your time. But the essence of this is spending time with the person who we're profiling and understanding the story, understanding someone who has experienced abuse as a child, what happens to this person, or someone who is a Muslim kid who's picked on at school, what happens to that kid, what are the thoughts of that child, and what happens with the family, with Dionysia's family, you know, her relationship with her dad. When I met Dio, a year and a half ago, perhaps, I had this conversation with her about, if you were to write a letter to your parents, what would that letter say? And so she wrote this letter, and that was the beginning of the film. Before I even met her family, we were working with this letter. We were working with her experiences as a child. What are those memories when you were young? So, and then, you know, I show up with the camera. Not only show up, but she came to pick me up. And we get in the car and we drive for, 3 hours? And this door opens. Her mom and dad open this door. And I have a bed to sleep in their house. And I have food to eat. And I have the ability to do my work, which is a dream. For those of us who are in filmmaking, it's a dream to have access and the possibility to be a fly on the wall and just be able to capture these moments of a family interacting, a family hanging out. It was a true gift. So this was my way of honoring that gift that they gave me.
And how did you find each other?
I have a wonderful intern who was at the time studying in the law school program at Berkeley, in the legal studies program, I should say. And I told her, you know, 3 or 4 years ago on NPR, I heard this story. So this was actually the whole Still I Rise, in a way, was very much inspired by public radio. I heard this story about a young Latina who had just graduated from UC Berkeley. And in this radio interview, she goes back to her family in Gilroy. And the radio journalist interviews the parents. And she was the first person in the family to graduate from college. And I remember driving in my car and listening to the story of what the parents have to say. They're speaking Spanish. And the young girl is translating for her parents. And, you know, it was so moving. I remember just being at a light and crying. You know, I felt like, why are we not hearing more of these stories? And why are we not seeing, most importantly, why am I not seeing films that reflect this? And so when I was, you know, discussing this issue with, or not issue, but this topic with Noor, I said to her, look, you're at UC Berkeley. I'm sure you can find someone or do some research. I was shooting abroad. So I said, do some research and see if you can find someone, you know, who has a similar story. And she found Dionysia. Mm-hmm. And so we met. And based on this one conversation, I said, would it be possible to come and film you and spend time with you and your family? And, you know, she understood the premise of Still I Rise and what we were trying to get across.
Mm. And Dionysia, what, I guess the other thing that struck me, Mimi, and this speaks to your talents, is the film is so short, but it really is so effective and so powerful. And any of us, all of us who are first-generation college students, regardless of our background, can completely relate to your story. The thing that really got me is when you said, in one lifetime, when you were speaking to your dad or about your dad, you and your work changed the entire trajectory of our entire family. I mean, that's really amazing. And so many people can relate to that. You also shared a lot of emotional stories. I mean, it was an emotional experience for you. What was it like to go back and visit your childhood and to really think about how you and your siblings' lives were affected by your parents' hard work?
Sure. Well, it was definitely a cathartic experience for me because these are things that I think about, but I'd never been forced to actually really say something. So the exercise that Mimi gave me of writing this letter really allowed me to put into words what I had felt and what I experienced. And so it was a really powerful and emotional experience for me. And I didn't expect for it to be that, but it became that. And you mentioned, you know, that Mimi, in her very talented way, was able to put all of this into this really short film. And I think, you know, I go home to visit my parents on the weekends here and there. I still stay very connected to where I grew up. And so we pack a lot into a weekend, right? It's all we have is that weekend. And so I think it was great that she got to experience what I experience when I go home is, you know, the care that I get from my parents. You know, I still feel sort of like a young child when I visit, and the care that they now pour into my kids. And we just have now a very different relationship than when we were younger. We know that we have less time together, and so we really make it count.
And when you take your children to see your parents, the footage of the visit is narrated, and you were talking about the letter that you wrote to them. And in the message to them, you retell some of your earliest memories of getting up early to help your parents gather fruits in the orchards. Is some of the things you shared with your kids, is this the first time you've talked to them about some of these things?
Definitely. That's another reason why it was so special, because they're so young. I have a 3-year-old and a 5-year-old that I've never really explored with them my upbringing, other than once in a while when I, you know, get angry at them and I say, you know, you don't know how good you have it. But other than that, you know, they just don't know a lot about my parents' past and our childhood, and you know, when they're old enough to understand, I would definitely share more of that with them. But they just get to see the good side, which is that now my dad has this vast garden and they get fresh squeezed orange juice every time they go home. So it was really special to be able to start to share some of that with them, just very little, but for them to start to explore.
And I think what's lucky about your experience is so many of us tend to ask questions when we lose family members. So when my grandparents passed, Native American grandparents, it's just opened this entire world of doing all this research and asking questions, which I did ask them a lot, but I'm just learning so much more after their deaths. What have you learned about your background and family as a result of working with Mimi on this project?
Yeah, well, for me, I guess because I had never asked, I had never received this information. And so I didn't realize how much my parents were actually willing to share. And so part of this was so exciting for me is to just learn small details, you know, how my parents felt during this particular time, you know, what their relationships were with other people in our community, you know, the doubts that they had, all these things parents don't share with their children. And so I think for them, it was an interesting experience for me to ask and then for them to be able to share as well. And so all around, it was, I think, a really great experience. And I think you're right. Sometimes it takes something for you to be able to start to ask questions, mm-hmm. right, about your own family history. And I did this a few years ago with my grandmother, too. And I just found that when you're interested, you know, your family is so willing to share their history and their story with you. And it's, just so many interesting things have come across.
And it's never too late to learn about where you come from. Never
right.
too late. Well, Mimi, in some of the other films you've worked on this series, do you have any other stories to share just about people who take time to reflect and maybe make a connection with a family member that they didn't have before?
Well, there is a story, there is a film we're working on right now called The Heart, and it's about a young man who immigrated with his parents from Ghana and lost his dad at a very young age to a preventable illness, and the character in the film, Victor Mensah, is now studying to be a doctor. He's very, very close to graduating. So in terms of a connection to his family, it's so much of the decisions we make in life is based on our own personal history. And so understanding that history and digging in and peeling those layers back, and again, doing it in a really respectful, in a really intimate way. You know, I read something by a writer a few months back, and it said, you cannot hate the people whose stories you know. Hmm. So it really moved me. I felt like this is exactly what we're trying to do. We're trying to create stories here that we don't necessarily see enough of to show, because there is it's such a divisive time. Mm-hmm. You know, it's such a time of us and them, and it's a strange time to live in. And I think we as artists and as documentarians, we have this obligation. Look, we have a choice. We can pack up and move and say, you know, there's too many steps that have been taken backwards. And history is going to look at this. Our children are going to look at this and think, what were you guys thinking? Hmm. Or we can stay here. We can stay and we can keep on fighting until there is no fight left in us. And each one of us has a different way to do that. Some of us do it by the skills that we have to tell stories. Some of us do it by protesting and being out there and showing our, you know, disgust and opposition and shame that we feel that this is all happening. But each one of us has to do our part.
Hmm. Mimi Chakarova is a filmmaker, photographer, and the creator of a number of films, including The Price of Sex. Her new documentary series is called Still I Rise. And Still I Rise really celebrates people who persevere in spite of their struggles. And one film is being released every month. You can watch the films and learn more. You can find the link at yourcallradio.org. Today we are talking about Mimi Chakarova's most recently released film, The Alien. And in that film, today's guest, Dionisia Ramos, explores the sacrifices her undocumented parents made for their four children when they came to the United States. Her father worked in the fields for 60 years, harvesting the land of others. And in the film, we now see him tending his own garden. And her parents ultimately put all four of their kids through college. I really love this line, you cannot hate the people whose stories you know. We'd love to chat with you about the power of storytelling. If there is a documentary that really stands out for you, or maybe a long-form radio piece you heard on public radio, you can give us a call at 866-798-8255. The other thing that made me really brought up for me when I was watching Mimi's film is that we're moving so fast. The media, things hit us in the face almost every hour now, if we're especially news junkies. So it's kind of nice just to sit back and really let a story sink in and think about it. What are your thoughts about the power of storytelling especially when we focus on the voices that we're not hearing in the media. 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can email your call at kalw.org. Head over to KALW's Facebook page, click on the video, and you can take part in the conversation there. Mimi, you recently told the Kitchen Sisters that you want to serve people who are underrepresented in the media and tell the kinds of stories that you don't hear so often. What are your thoughts on, I mean, I just love this quote, you cannot hate the people whose stories you know. Have you had an experience with someone who maybe saw one of your films and had an aha moment and said, oh, you just completely erased my stereotypes?
I had so many of those experiences, particularly with men, after I released The Price of Sex. Mm. Because, you know, I did so many public speaking engagements at film festivals and universities and different cinemas. And men would often say, you know, I'm not one of those guys, you know, but I go to strip clubs and I watch a lot of porn. And sometimes, you know, I've paid for prostitution. And I would say, I appreciate you revealing this to me, but how often have you asked the women a question of how they came to do what they're doing, you know, how they came to this place? And you can imagine the answer that often, you know, they don't ask. So seeing the film triggers this very different reaction of, wow, it's an aha moment of, mm-hmm. I am a part of something. And that's with that particular film, I would tell people will always say, well, what can I do? And I would say, you know, stop engaging in those activities, because they're all intertwined. They're all part of that, you know, corruption and that cycle of violence against women. It happens all the time. Mm. And that's why, because we've had so many of these moments, you feel like, I'm going to keep on creating this type of work. Now, Still I Rise is brand new. We just released it. You know, we launched it 2 months ago. And we have 5 more films in the works, and then hopefully 10 more next year.
Wow.
So it's going to keep on growing. And the way I look at the films, like Dionysius' film, they're short stories. They're not feature length. They're not books. They're short stories. And if we do it right, and that's the challenge of how do you convey this much information in 10 to 15 minutes, but if it's done right, it can have a powerful effect. And I look at them as pieces of a puzzle. Now imagine we have 10, 12, 20 of these films, different issues, different topics, 5 that we're working on right now. That creates a pattern of, that creates a voice of, okay, this series is about something. And it's about, it's not just about people overcoming struggle, because that's universal. We
right.
all deal with struggle. What do you do with that struggle? Mm. How do you use that struggle to affect the lives of others? That's the main question.
Mm. And just given the time that we're in right now, there's just so much going on, and it's very overwhelming. How are you deciding where to focus?
So much of it is serendipity, believe it or not. There is a lot of research that I do, but also there are certain themes. You know, in the interview with the Kitchen Sister, I talk about anger. Mm. Anger is a big motivator for the work that I do. Mm. I get pissed off about a lot of things that I'm seeing. We're going to the border in September. Mm. You know, my camera woman, Stefania, and I will be there, and we will be focusing on a Still I Rise story at the border, because that's based on anger. It's the anger of what's been happening recently with these kids and these parents. We are doing a story about how history, American history, is being taught in schools, hmm. you know, in schools in Texas, for example, where slavery and what happened to Native Americans, how is that information being given to kids? Hmm. So a lot of this is about kind of not so much rewriting history, but just checking it. Like, hmm. let's check this. Why are we doing this? When we have all the facts, and if you have research skills, and if you have the time to do that, and that's a big thing, time. Mm. You need to have time. If you have time, you can really dig in, and you can really do something that's powerful, and that shows you that, wait a second, we have all this knowledge and access to information, and we have all these people who don't have time to tell their stories, because you know what? They're too busy making a living, and they're too busy doing their day-to-day stuff, raising their kids and making sure there is food on the table. They don't have the spotlight on them. But we as filmmakers have that ability to tell those stories mm. and to find those people. So a lot of it is based on, you know, just like the O story. I heard an interview on NPR. This was years ago. But I have something in my mind, a mental note of, I'm going to return to this. one day I'm going to return to this, and I will seek it out. I will find someone who has that story. And it just happened that Dio's story couldn't be more perfect. Mm.
And you can see the story, The Alien, at yourcallradio.org. Mimi Chakarova is a filmmaker, photographer, and creator of the films. The Price of Sex, the film she was just talking about, documents sex trafficking of Eastern European girls. Really incredible film. I hope you can see that. Her new series is called Still I Rise, and The Alien features today's guest, Dionisia Ramos, which explores the sacrifices her undocumented parents made for their four children as they left Mexico and came to the United States. This is Your Call, and we'll be back after this. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, we will rebroadcast our conversation with whistleblower Daniel Ellsberg. We talked about his book, The Doomsday Machine, Confessions of a Nuclear War Planner. Thursday, we'll be joined by longtime labor activist Jane McAlevey. We'll have a wide-ranging conversation about the recent Janus Supreme Court case. We will talk about the teacher strikes. Unfortunately, the sixth suicide of a New York driver in New York because they cannot keep up with Uber and Lyft. And we'll also talk about the future of abortion as Donald Trump chooses a new Supreme Court justice. Today, we are talking about the power of storytelling, especially during a time like this. Today, we're joined by Mimi Chakarova, filmmaker, photographer, and creator of the new documentary series, Still I Rise. Mimi is creating films that amplify the stories she believes deserve far more attention. One film is being released every month, and you can watch them at stillirisefilms.org. She's got five more in store this year, and then 10 next year. We're talking today about The Alien, and it features today's guest, Dionisia Ramos, who explores the sacrifices her parents made for their four children when they decided to leave Mexico and come to the United States. Well, let's talk about why your parents decided to leave Mexico. Where did they live in Mexico?
In Colima. It's the third smallest state in Mexico. And it's just right below Jalisco, right above Michoacán on the Pacific coast. And my dad was working with his siblings to help support my grandmother, his mom, and, you know, doing odd jobs and really not making it. There weren't a lot of opportunities. He had to drop out of school in the equivalent of the third grade. And so, you know, he originally came as a bracero to the United States. And then when that program ended, continued to come then as an undocumented immigrant and worked all across the state of California and in Oregon and Washington as well. And so for him, it was just this is where there was work and opportunity. And the United States needed his work. Mm. And so he made his life here. And then eventually, after he and my mother married in Mexico, my mom came here on a green card. And, you know, they've been here ever since. Mm. And they became citizens in the 80s.
What did you learn about the 60 years your dad spent harvesting the land of others? How was he treated? How was he paid? What did you learn about that time?
Yeah, I mean, what he revealed is that, you know, what we know already, that that type of work is not stable. Mm-hmm. And so he moved a lot. And, you know, he sometimes lived in some facilities that were, you know, deteriorated, and that workers really had no power, right? They didn't have any leverage. And so he moved along according to where there was work. And, you know, sometimes they were not paid, sometimes they were underpaid, and, you know, workers just sort of had to take that at that time.
And as you reveal, as all farm workers, the work is completely backbreaking. The hours are grueling, extremely long. You're just not treated fairly or humanely in many cases.
Sure, yeah. And we, you know, my siblings and I got to experience this. So our childhood memories are of, in particular, we did the prune harvest every summer. And now we can sort of, you know, think about these times and sort of laugh about some of the adventures that we had. You know, but for my dad, it was very serious work. And so that's why earlier on, our memories of him are being very strict because he was all business. We, you know, we parked our car at, you know, before the sun came up, and he got out of the car and he started working immediately. And so, you know, we all had to fall in line because he was just so very serious about it. But it is, you know, we got to experience the soft side of it. You know, we would sit down and eat a sandwich when we were hungry, and, you know, we'd go and say we had to use the restroom or something because we wanted to, you know, like take a walk for a minute. And so, but for my dad, you know, he experienced a really tough life's work. Mm.
Because as you say, sometimes on the weekly trip to the grocery store, there wasn't enough money to buy milk. So he was on a mission to make sure he had that money to buy milk for his family.
Right, yeah. And you asked earlier about, you know, something that I learned throughout this process. And that's something that was revealed to me by my mom that they had never revealed to us. We just, you know, we just always had memories of growing up and having a great childhood, and we had no idea of the kinds of struggles that they went through, in particular early on when there wasn't stable work and when, you know, at that time there was just the three girls before my brother was born. But so it was tough, and so that's what drove him.
Mm. What does your mom and dad say about the plight of farm workers today? Because here in California, the fifth largest economy in the world, I mean, we've done so many shows about farm workers who can't even afford to eat the fruits and the vegetables that they pick.
Right. I mean, I don't know that they have necessarily, my parents are not so political, and so I don't know that they have necessarily an opinion. Mm-hmm. But I think it's true. It's true that I think they would agree with the feeling that you know, farm workers are very needed. They play an important role in this society, and that in a way, you know, immigrants are so vilified. Mm-hmm. And, you know, to be able to bring those two ideas together that, you know, we need people to do this really tough work, and at the same time to say, no, we don't, you know, we don't need you. We don't need any new immigrants. Who's going to do that work? And so there, I think they would agree that that immigrants are very vilified and justifiably.
Mm. Rose, if I may interject, there is such poetic justice to Dio's story. And it comes in the garden of her dad because he grows everything. So after 60 years of working other people's land, he gets to grow his own stuff now. And there is this beautiful thing that we couldn't include in the film, and it's about the guavas. Do you remember that story about the Christmas lights?
Oh, yes. So my dad has two guava trees because, as Mimi said, you could give my dad anything and he will grow it in his garden. And so he's grown anything you can imagine. And so people are surprised to hear that in Northern California he can grow two guava trees. Hmm. And what he does is when it gets really cold, you know, they have to stay warm. So he wraps them in Christmas lights and turns on the Christmas lights at night so that they can keep the warmth from the lights. So, yeah, his green thumb is epic. And every trip home that I take, I come home with oranges, mandarins, chiles, tomatillos, anything you can imagine. It's in my car and he's packed it up because he's grown it.
Mimi, can you talk more about the power of telling this very short but powerful story at a time when immigrants are being so vilified in the media and by this White House?
I mean, look, I read something that you posted a couple of days ago that said, you know, how people are protesting and they have these signs that says, you know, we're all immigrants. I can say that. I'm an immigrant. But there's a lot of people here who are not immigrants. You know, black people did not come here as immigrants, unless, you know, they're recent immigrants from African countries. But we're talking, again, about history and understanding history. And if you were forced to come to this country, and if it's your sweat and blood that made other people rich, it's a very different history than someone who says we're all immigrants. Mm. If your people were exterminated, you know, and killed off, and their land was taken. I'm talking about the original indigenous people of this land. You're not an immigrant. This was your place. Mm. So I think it's really important to to know this. And same with, you know, with people coming from Mexico, Central America, Guatemala, El Salvador, and so on. Everyone has a story as to why they make this journey. Those of us who've come to this country, we did not come here because we were seeking adventure. We came here because we were seeking a better life. We were seeking an opportunity. You know, you don't pack up in your 40s. I'm talking about my parents, for example, in your 40s and start a whole new life. You know, when my mom and I came, she had $5 in her pocket. So you don't do this because you're leaving this amazing life back home. And I think it's really important for people to understand this about immigration. There is such a disconnect of these experiences. You know, it's so easy to judge. It's so easy to say, oh, you're just the other and you're here to take something that is mine. I don't know. The whole idea of tolerance in the United States, what has happened to that? You know, this used to be the most tolerant place that people would come to and feel welcome. What happened to that concept? Why is it that what has happened to us as human beings? Why is it that we don't care anymore? That's the ultimate question. Why is it that we don't care anymore?
Well, and don't you think people do care? I mean, this is it's a divide and conquer strategy by this administration, because rather than be angry at the CEO who's making $40 million a year while you're barely making ends meet, you're going to be angry at the Mexican or the Guatemalan who can't afford to eat the fruit that they are picking. I mean, it's a old but very brilliant strategy, and this administration is really taking this to a whole new level.
But I also think it's an issue of empathy. I think it's an issue of not being willing to put yourself in somebody else's shoes, or being able to imagine what it's like to be in someone else's shoes, and not understanding the stories. I don't know how many people really understand what the conditions. You know, Lydia Chavez and I were in El Salvador and Guatemala doing stories about Madre Salvatrucha with UC Berkeley students. We know what those neighborhoods are like. We know what it's like to be in a place where MS-13 controls it, or 18th Street. We know what it's like for a girl to try to find a job and she has tattoos that she has to remove from her back. It's a very painful process, but she can't get a job. You know, the options are so limited. You need to be, and I'm not saying that everyone should go to Central America or to Mexico and see what the conditions are like. What I'm saying is, inform yourself. There is enough of us doing work in those areas that do it, you know, that do it well, that do it with dignity and with honor, and we respect the people that we document, we interview. There is enough of us. There is enough information. In today's age, you have no excuse not to have this information.
Well, if you'd like to join us to talk about this, what do you think of the coverage, the stories that we're hearing or we're not hearing? This is getting so much attention. But do you feel like the individual stories are being told? The toll-free number is 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. Mimi Chakarova is a filmmaker. We're talking about her new series, Still I Rise. And in the film, The Alien, Dionisia Ramos explores the sacrifices her parents made when her dad left Mexico to come to the United States. They ultimately put four of their children through college. Mimi, you make such a good point. I mean, the other thing is, I love that you're going to do a piece about what children learn in history class, because so much of what is happening, you can directly relate and connect to U.S. policies like NAFTA, the School of the Americas in Central America, support for dictators. I mean, the list goes on, and the documentary Harvest of Empire should be shown in every high school across the country. It's an amazing film that takes a look at each individual country and the connections it has with the United States. So I think that this is a very good point. And how do you get what you're exploring in your films into the wider dialogue and conversation? How can we get it on CNN, for example?
I think it's going to take time. Yeah. I mean, we're starting something, it's like a little seed, right? And we have to treat it right. We have to, and also you have to imagine that we're so busy actually making the work, but that's where people like you come in, you know, and it's you who, you help us spread the word, and you know, print journalists as well. We need as much coverage as we possibly can get. And I'm being patient because we have so much work that's being done right now. And I think by the end of the year, there'll be a lot more films and you'll be able to see hopefully in a few months you'll say, oh, that's what she was talking about when we were on the show. You know, it's going to grow, and you'll see those lessons. You'll see I'm trying to do it in a really artful way mm-hmm. as well. This is my way of combining journalism with art. All of the artists that we commission, when hopefully people will watch The Alien, you'll see beautiful artwork. There are a lot of illustrations in the work that we do, and they're all artists of color. Mm. And so in a lot of situations, there are people from the communities that are illustrating those stories. Maybe you can say a little bit about Alberto.
Sure, yeah. So Alberto Ledesma provided the artwork for the film, and he did some beautiful sketches of some of the photographs that I shared from my childhood. He is my brother-in-law, and he wrote a book called, well, he illustrated and wrote a book called Diary of a Dreamer. And so he has been documenting through artwork a lot of his experiences as an undocumented student at UC Berkeley, and now he works at UC Berkeley, as does my husband, in support of underrepresented students. So it was really special for me to have his artwork incorporated in mm-hmm. my family story.
It really is beautiful artwork.
Yeah.
And Dionysia, what are your thoughts on sharing your story at a time like this and trying, as Mimi said earlier, if people learn about a personal story, it's really hard for them to put you in the other category or in many cases to, quote, hate you. Right. So do you feel a responsibility to stand up and say, this is my experience? I mean, seeing those little kids, that could have been you.
Right. Well, I think when this project started, first, I have to say quite honestly that my feeling was, well, I don't think my story is so extraordinary that it would, you know, be a special project for a film like this. And then my parents sort of had the same reaction as, you know, they just sort of live their lives and they're pretty reserved. And they thought, you know, why would our story be so extraordinary? And so I think I didn't necessarily feel a responsibility. But at the time, I think it was just sort of my way of telling my parents' story. Mm-hmm. And I do really feel like it's special to be able to share that with other people. And I hope that, you know, in seeing me through this film, they can also see their neighbors and children that are in school and really sort of understand and be able to see people, you know, as people. And not as others. And mm-hmm. so there I do feel like it is a great responsibility of those of us who have had a successful experience in this country to be able to share that with others.
We have a few phone calls, but I think they just dropped. So I think we're having some technical issues. I'll try to bring in some of these questions. Harry in San Jose says that income can be an issue for new immigrants. Especially now as things in California especially are so, so expensive. I'm sure he wanted to elaborate on that, but we don't have him on the line. Mimi?
Of course. It's absolutely, you're absolutely right. It's a huge issue. You know, a lot of people who immigrate, it takes a number of years to feel like, you know, you can, to really feel that you're familiar with your environment, that you know where the stores are, that you know, and you have to keep in mind the language, mm-hmm. the language barrier. A lot of people who come don't speak English, so you have to navigate a whole new system and also a place, and imagine on top of this being undocumented. So you have to kind of find your own community, which makes it even more difficult to, you know, be a part of something if we want to use the word assimilate, you know, so people want you to assimilate, but how can you assimilate when there's so many obstacles that stand in your way? Because you have the language barrier, you have the financial barrier, you're poor. It's a huge issue. Mm. Poverty is a huge issue.
And I'll just add to that I think that's why education was so important for these communities, right? That mm-hmm. is the way out. Right, is having an opportunity that you didn't have to be able to open up all sorts of career opportunities and experiences for your kids. And so I feel like, at least in my situation, I think I say in the film, how did you have so much clarity? Mm-hmm. And that was something that I really reflected on in this film, because they came to a new country, didn't speak the language, you know, at the time didn't know a lot of people, and so many things coming at you. And at the same time, you know, you knew that this is what you wanted for your children, and it was so important, so much so that I just don't ever remember a time when it wasn't important for them to have us do well in school. This is what their main focus was. And I think, you know, for a lot of immigrants, this is how they see their children's way out. Mm.
And I'm guessing that when your parents sent you and your siblings to college, it was probably less than half of the cost it is today.
Oh, sure. Yeah. I see the cost of tuition today, and it's terrifying in particular, right, because I have two small children. But yes, and at the time, you know, we were also low income, and so we had a lot of opportunities to get scholarships, to get grants. And so for them, that wasn't even an obstacle. It was, you know, get there and somehow it'll get figured out.
Caroline also called in from Redwood City, and she wanted to talk about the differences in immigration experiences of those who are already here and those who are arriving now. Mm-hmm. How do immigrants see one another?
Yeah, well, I do think it can be a source of some conflict. I personally don't understand, having come from a family of immigrants, how you wouldn't have empathy or how you wouldn't just feel completely for someone who is going through this very different experience. It is a different time. And so I, in my situation, I see my community coming together and saying, we need to find a way to support this new community of immigrants, that it's facing something so different than what our parents faced.
Yeah, I don't understand that disconnect. I don't understand how those of us who have gone through the same struggles can now turn our backs on people who are, instead of helping, instead of showing them that, look, it's, you know, here are the steps you need to take, and this is what you need to do. It's a disconnect. And again, it goes back to empathy. It's kind of losing your heart.
Well, and also, we've done so many shows about the, quote, good immigrant. Like in your case, Dionysia, your family made it. You all graduated from college. You have a great job at Hayward Unified School District. And so you would be the sort of the shining example. But what about the undocumented man who's a busboy in a restaurant, for example, or picking fruit in the fields? You know, we had a lot of these conversations around DACA. It's almost like the students are the shining example of the immigrant. But what about the undocumented immigrants who are in the shadows?
Well, I do think it's difficult, because I feel very fortunate to have lived the experience that my parents lived, right? They, even though it was challenging, they were able to find work. We were able to go through, you know, school and find programs that assisted us in getting to college. That's not everyone's journey. Mm-hmm. And so there are some immigrant families who are maybe leaving for other reasons, you know, fleeing violence, and they're carrying other baggage that we didn't carry. And, you know, there might be single mothers who have a more challenging time and have to work and don't have the ability to maybe reinforce, you know, the importance of an education. And so I do think it's really hard to put people in these two categories, because even though they're both immigrant stories, they can be very different journeys, and people face very different challenges.
Mm-hmm. I think, again, it's about just taking the time to listen, taking the time to hear. You know, yeah, the kid who's working in the restaurant, that kid also has a story. It does not make him a bad immigrant.
Right.
Just makes him somebody who's hustling, trying to you know, to make it, you know, whatever his definition of making it is.
Yeah, I think, sadly, this is happening because everyone is so on edge about what's going to happen with this administration, whether it's DACA, whether it's, will they ever connect these kids back to their parents? Right. I mean, some of the people that we've had on and some of the articles I've read said they kept no track. And in fact, one woman who was interviewed by the BBC, she has been separated from her young boy for 50 days. She just got out of a detention center. She's got an ankle bracelet that she has to wear. someone gave her a phone number for a boy in her boy in New York. She's calling this number and no one's answering. I mean, she has no idea where her child is.
Yeah.
It's just shocking.
It's having no human rights. It's that being taken away from you. You have no rights as a human being.
We have another caller who couldn't stay on who wanted to know how listeners can support the Still I Rise project.
You can support it by watching it, and the best support we need and would appreciate is telling others, making others. I mean, look, I can say you can help with funding, but we're taken care of when it comes to that. We're very, very fortunate to have people who have been supporting our work.
Congratulations.
Thank you. But what we need help is just, we're young, we're new, just, you know, as we grow, we need more people to know about this. We need more people to watch and more people to be engaged.
And a quick preview of what's to come.
We have, so if you go to stillirisefilms.org, you will find, just click on films and you'll see there's three films that are coming up, The Heart, The Bullet, and The Lesson, some of what I discussed on the show. And there is another two in the works, which we will announce pretty soon.
And Dionysia, just quickly, what has this experience taught you about the power of storytelling?
Well, it's been really amazing, the reaction that I've received from friends and colleagues. So in particular, what's been special is that even though my story is my story, it's triggered something in the memory of other people who have similar stories or who just have a human experience that they can relate to. So that's been really wonderful.
Dionysia Ramos is featured in The Alien, which explores the sacrifices her undocumented parents made for their four children to find better lives in the United States. And you can watch it at stillirisefilms.org. Mimi Chakarova is the filmmaker behind Still I Rise, and she's got 5 stories coming out this year, another 10 next year. And you can find information about her past films, including one about sex trafficking of Eastern European girls, at yourcallradio.org. Dionysia and Mimi, thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you.
And thank you always for your films, Mimi. Really amazing.
Pleasure. It's always good to see you.
Thank you. You too. Your Call is produced here at KALW in San Francisco. Tomorrow, we will revisit our conversation with whistleblower Daniel Ellsberg to discuss his book, The Doomsday Machine, Confessions of a Nuclear War Planner. Thanks to Laura Wenis for producing today's show and Luis Hernandez, who is our intern. And thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call.